You're listening to Pursuing Justice, a podcast from Juvenile Law Center.
Each episode spotlights a pressing issue in the child welfare and juvenile justice systems and brings you true stories from the youth who deal with them.
Pursuing Justice is produced by Juvenile Law Center, a public interest law firm dedicated to advancing the rights and well-being of children in jeopardy. Consider supporting this work and giving to the Juvenile Law Center by going to the support page on www.jlc.org.
Hello and welcome to Pursuing Justice. I'm Yoe Shaw. Today, we begin a new series called Reform in the Wake of Luzerne.
Show me the video if you can, Dan. These are two elected officials in Pennsylvania. They're pleading guilty, get this, to taking kickbacks in exchange for
judges who were literally paid millions of dollars to send kids to jail. The kickbacks came from the privately run juvenile detention centers that stood to make those
millions. Often with no prior record, were brought before these judges for charges as minor as stealing change from cars.
In 2009, one of the worst juvenile justice scandals in the nation's history broke and made headlines everywhere. Two Luzerne County, Pennsylvania judges were accused of accepting nearly $2.9 million in kickbacks from the developer and former owner of two private, for-profit juvenile facilities. In exchange for the money, former judges Mark Chivarella and Michael Conahan contracted with private juvenile facilities and ensured that Luzerne County youth filled the beds. The conspiracy lasted from 2003 to 2008 and involved as many as 6,500 juvenile cases and as many as 4,000 individual children, many of whom did not have an attorney. With this month marking the two-year anniversary of the discovery of the Luzerne County Kids for Cash scandal, we wanted to re-examine what structural issues in the juvenile justice system allowed the scandal to happen in the first place, and to see what reform measures have or have not been put into place to ensure that this never happens again. We start our series today with a story of Hillary Transu, whose case led Juvenile Law Center to discover and tackle the problem years before the scandal broke.
It actually started in 1999. We received an email from a mom up in the Wilkes-Barre area who told us that her son had been adjudicated delinquent and sent away to a placement, and he wasn't represented by an attorney. And he basically made an admission to an offense in a hearing that took maybe 60 seconds at most. And that really concerned us.
Juvenile Law Center Associate Director Lourdes Rosado and Deputy Director and Chief Counsel Marsha Levick are attorneys who led the legal efforts to investigate and defend the victims of the Kids for Cash scandal. In 2009, Rosado and Levick were named Citizens of the Year by the Philadelphia Inquirer for their work in exposing the judicial kickback scheme.
So we immediately became involved in the case and actually appealed that child's adjudication, and ultimately that was reversed by the Superior Court. At that time, we were very pleased because the judge involved, the judge who adjudicated him, Mark Chivarella, was quoted in the newspapers as saying that he would never do it again, that he would never allow a youth to appear before him for a delinquency matter without an attorney. So we thought we had accomplished our goal, not only in getting this child's adjudication reversed, but also ensuring that other children in Luzerne County had counsel.
So you thought it was over,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't. What was the next, you know, the second major red flag about Luzerne County?
In 2007, in the spring of 2007, we actually got a call from another mom who was calling us about her daughter, Hillary Transu, who at that time was a sophomore in high school and had just been adjudicated delinquent for creating a parody of her vice principal on a MySpace page. It was intended to be in jest. She actually had something on the page about how this was meant to be a joke, and she hoped her vice principal had a sense of humor.
Initially, I expected that I would receive a fine. You know, Hillary, it's really not polite to do that sort of thing to school administration members and sort of be reprimanded for that. But I then began to suspect through friends that I would get probation, and some people even suggested that if I went before Judge Chivarella, that yes, I would be sent away.
Even with these doubts, Hillary was completely unprepared for what happened next.
We went up to this desk. Eventually, my mom came up, and we're talking to this woman, and she says, do you have an attorney? And, you know, my mom and I look at each other, and she's like, well, no, I don't have an attorney. And the woman just passively hands us a paper and says, well, sign this. And we signed it, and we assumed that when we signed that paper that said, no, we don't have an attorney, that we would then be on some sort of list, you know, for a public defender, for an assigned attorney.
The paper they signed turned out to be a waiver of Hillary's right to counsel. When they walked into the courtroom before Judge Civarella, Hillary and her mom realized they were on their own, with no attorney to help them.
The first thing that he said to me was, what makes you think you can do this kind of crap? I think contempt is the appropriate word I would use for Civarella's attitude towards me. Was just pure, utter contempt. And after two or three quick comments, he mentioned something adjudicated delinquent, which of course didn't mean anything to me at the time. And I sort of felt my mother, who had her hands on my shoulder and sort of whispering things in my ear like, remember to say sir and stuff like that. I sort of felt her falter.
Hillary was shackled, dragged from the courtroom, and sent to a wilderness camp for 3 months. Here's Marsha Levick.
And so again, we were confronted with a situation in front of the same judge where a child had appeared without counsel, had been adjudicated delinquent in a matter of about a minute and a half, and had been let out of the courtroom in shackles and handcuffs and placed.
When you first got this complaint, what were the next steps that you all took?
We had an immediate concern, which was to get Hillary out of her placement. And so we succeeded in doing that over the course of the next week or 10 days. But once we did that, we were curious about whether or not this pattern of allowing kids to appear without counsel, in fact, ran much deeper than one individual child in Luzerne County. And so we began a lengthy investigation over the course of the next several months, looking at state data, talking to other individuals and kids who had appeared before Judge Civarella, and ultimately concluded that the situation actually was really broken in Luzerne County. And we were able to determine that the rate of juveniles appearing without counsel in Civarella's courtroom was about 10 times as high as the state average. About 50% of the kids were appearing without lawyers in Luzerne County.
Once Hillary got back to school, she worked with her good friend and fellow victim, Jessica Van Reef, to spread awareness and find other youth who appeared before Judge Civarella.
We started the Hillary Jessica campaign. I mean, we would walk up to every kid we knew who had been locked up before, and we'd say, like, hey, man, did you have an attorney?
I think what I was struck by and what was different from 1999 was that we were seeing a lot of kids on very minor offenses being sent away. So, for example, one young woman, her parents called because she had been arrested for having less than $5 worth of marijuana in her glove compartment. And they were shocked when the judge ordered her away to placement. Again, this was a young woman who had never been in trouble with the law. They purposely didn't seek out a lawyer because they thought that the judge would be fair.
The phone calls and horror stories kept coming. Eventually, attorneys Marsha Levick and Lourdes Rosado realized they needed to do something more global to address the issue.
After we did a handful or so of individual cases, we realized through our research that we were actually dealing with hundreds, if not thousands, of kids, all of whose rights to counsel had been violated. And so we began to, frankly, look for a more creative way to achieve widespread relief for these hundreds of kids. Unlike adults in Pennsylvania, children have no ability to challenge unlawful adjudications or unlawful sentences after 30 days from the date that they are actually placed. So that what that means is that they have no opportunity to file extraordinary post-conviction petitions, for example, years after they've been adjudicated, maybe based on other evidence or change in law. Without that remedy, we had no choice but to, in a way, think outside the box. And we decided ultimately to file something called a King's Bench petition, which is an extraordinary application to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, asking them to exercise original jurisdiction as if they were a trial court and to allow Juvenile Law Center access to the identification and case files of all of the children who appeared before Judge Civarella for a period of several years going back to 2003 in order to allow us to seek to expunge and vacate their records once we were able to determine that they had in fact also had their rights violated.
They filed the petition and waited. Both the Department of Public Welfare and Attorney General filed amicus briefs urging the state Supreme Court to grant Juvenile Law Center's petition. Still, months went by without a word from the court. Juvenile Law Center even filed an amended petition to identify new cases and to get the court's attention. Finally, After the petition had been sitting in front of the court for more than half a year, the decision came down, denied.
And they issued an order in early January of 2009 denying our King's Bench petition in a two-line order. The order didn't even contain the reasoning as to why.
Then, on January 26, 2009, the federal indictments against judges Mark Chivarella and Michael Conahan came out.
It was a day of lots of phone calls. I think that we were not 100% surprised. Rumors had been swirling for months in Luzerne County that something was afoot, that something was being investigated. There was speculation that had been going on probably for more than a year, questioning the involvement of these juvenile court judges in the new juvenile detention center that had been built up there.
I wasn't entirely surprised, not in the sense that I totally knew what was going on the whole time, but in the sense that you knew that there was something wrong. Former Judge Chivarella clearly has a very large ego, but there is this feeling behind it of it's got to be more than that. And so when it was about money, when, you know, we all sort of realized or were told that actually, my peers and I were being prostituted. We were being sold, like, for money. And it was totally just disgust.
Juvenile Law Center immediately refiled the King's Bench petition and included additional claims of violations of children's constitutional rights. Not surprisingly, within 24 hours, the Supreme Court granted the petition this time and eventually issued an order to vacate and expunge the cases and records of all of the thousands of youth who appeared before Judge Chivarella between 2003 and 2008.
The Supreme Court action in vacating the cases was an extraordinary step, and it certainly gave our clients the thing that they wanted most, which was to erase these illegal adjudications and have their records clean so that these illegal proceedings would never interfere with their ability to get employment and education, enlist in the Army, and do all those things that they wanted to do. But they haven't been made whole by the Supreme Court action, and that's because under state law, when a child is placed by the delinquency court, the county can collect child support from the parents to actually help pay for the placement, and that's what happened in this case.
Not only did kids and their families help to cover the cost for the wrongful placements, they also had to pay all sorts of fees to the court. None of that money has been returned, which is why Juvenile Law Center filed a federal lawsuit seeking monetary compensation for the kids and their families. But for many of the victims who were denied their right to counsel and shackled in the courtroom, some things can never be paid back or erased.
I think there was really a conspiracy of silence that was unfolding in Luzerne County. I think that we now know that there is a deep culture of corruption within the county that really goes back decades and extends beyond the court itself, so that lawyers in the courtroom, whether it was the district attorney or public defenders, other juvenile justice professionals, all were willing to observe silently what was happening to these kids without raising their voices. At the same time, parents themselves, I believe, felt disempowered to raise their voices, perhaps feeling that even if they had raised their voices, there might not have been any response anyway. I think that when you put all of those pieces together, you end up with a situation in which, for a period of at least 5 years that we know of, children's constitutional rights were probably violated on a daily basis in front of individuals who knew exactly what was going on or should have known better, and who permitted it to continue.
It's super enlightening. I think it almost makes me a better person for having witnessed something that completely just stole my faith in, you know, faith in adults, my faith in the court system, in my government, my community, but, you know, had it completely restored just through Juvenile Law Center, and I think, yes, it was something really terrible that happened to me personally, but what came out of it was that, once again, thousands of other kids were able to be vindicated, were able to see justice.
Join us in 2 weeks for the next episode in our Reform in the Wake of Luzerne series. We'll discuss the structural issues that allowed the Kids for Cash scandal to happen to youth like Hillary, and examine the current state of reform. You'll hear from Juvenile Law Center attorney Rhea Shaw and Judge John Cleland, chairman of the Interbranch Commission on Juvenile Justice. Special thanks to Hillary Transu, who now attends Franklin Pierce University in New Hampshire. Thanks for listening.